continue or wrap up. Yes, I just want to put it on record that I saw what you meant. I saw what you meant about some of the questions that I posed to the DG. It's only that perhaps the auditor should have said, no, we are sure that has been dealt with because he has been saying they are working together. Thank you.
Alright, thank you very much. There's some funny voices here. Are they voice from the engines or what's going on? As long as it's not sabotage, no problem. Alright, let's continue. We're going to start committee or committee, or I said I'll come back to you. Yeah, so fine, let's start it. Yeah.
Thanks, Samrit. Yeah, I've just got five questions that I would like to pose. I want to refer the department to page 114 of the annual report. 13.2, other debtors. There's an amount there of 14 million rand. Transport payment suspense. Could somebody enlighten us what does that mean? On page 114, 14 million rand transport payment suspense, and it's a debtor. Who's owing us that money and why?
The suspense account, much of it is reflected as a debt, but it's an account where if there are transactions which have not been cleared, they will be parked there. So that has been cleared. It gets cleared every month. So that would have been cleared.
Are you then suggesting, DG, that 14 million rand was money that went in there just for the month of March? If you're saying it was cleared every month, is that one month's transaction, 40 million rand? What type of transactions are those? I mean, what is the nature of those type of transactions that cannot be allocated to the chart of accounts immediately? What, give me a sense of what type of account, what type of expenses are there?
Voices that are social media, so the technical problem that is being attended to. But anyway, let's continue.
Look, the department uses a number of vehicles, and so this would have been some of those transactions which should have payments that should have been made to the service provider. And those are the ones which should have been cleared much later. But you may just want to take note of the fact that having nine regions, that each of those regions have various assets, dams, canals. So there's a lot of traveling that is involved. So we use a service provider for fleet vehicles, and those transactions sometimes they. they delay in terms of payment, but it is those types of transport expenses that we're talking about.
I'm not understanding. Maybe somebody must help me. He says, as a debtors, people owing us money. That's how I understand the debtors, somebody owing me money. Now the DG is saying it's for expenses for cars or service that isn't provided. So either I don't understand or you don't understand. Because if it is a debtor, then it means we are expecting that money. So whether the service provider gives you an invoice or not, this is not what we're speaking about.
If the chat has been terminated, the information I'm giving is actually accurate, but we can give you more information if the chat has been accurate.
No, sir, maybe I'm not understanding the stuff.
No, let's do this conversation. Let's check with the Auditor General. Are we having a misunderstanding? Is correct. That's why we have this interaction, DJ, so that we at the end of the day can be clarified of the. Or even the account in general. If you have that page, you have seen that. Are we getting the correct explanation, or are we making the correct interpretation?
From where I'm sitting, I wouldn't really know offhand the detail on the numbers like that.
No. I think what we want are not the numbers and the details thereof. The department says that that money is the transient account where money that they had to pay out for service provided is put. Now, commission says no, but if you say we're debtors, it means these are people who are owing us money. So it's not our money that we want to pay to other people. So we want to reconcile this interpretation. Not the details, we'll come to the details later, but that interpretation, is it? Which one is correct?
A debtor is money that is due to us, it's true, and it arises out of various circumstances. For instance, if there is a payment of more, if it's an expense, if there is a payment of more than what should have been paid at that time, that could then result in a debtor. But the specifics in this amount, I will not be able to pronounce. But a debtor is a money that is owed to the department that the department expects to receive at some point.
Right, so we might be having an incorrect heading in terms of, I'm saying we might be having an incorrect heading. We may not argue with the substance because we don't know. We rely on what the department says. But in terms of the heading, it should not say, that should not be that as if it is money that we are paying out. No. That has been cleared by the accountant general. So that's not the point of dispute. And then the department was to clarify or explain something further around that. Yes, Mr. Accountant General.
In government, debtors arise in these fashions. One, if there's an advance that has been made, that becomes a debtor. If you go overseas and you got an advance and you spent the money before you get the vouchers and the invoices of the expenditure for that money to be cleared, it would sit as the money that is expected to be paid back. One of the areas in which most departments use the substance account, if there are payments that are not yet properly defined, even receipts, they end up being listed as creditors as far as receipts are concerned. If there are payments that have been made and the department isn't quite sure because either the documentation, whatever it is, they don't have the proper allocation for that. They would then leave it there until it's cleared as well. When they get the proper document, that would assist the department in clearing it and allocating it to a particular board. In that instance, it reflects the money that is due back to the department. But if you then pick up that money shouldn't have been paid, you would have that money to be claimable by the department, and so on. So in some instances, it may be money that are waiting for clearance as such when the proper documentation is attached, and then you would allocate it to a particular board and let it get cleared from the debtors.
Okay, let's accept that argument, Chair. I think what we must say is that this lends itself to money being spent and in future unable to account for it. What I'm hearing you saying is that the department is paid out, we are waiting for the invoices to be able to clear it. Now, a classic example is, you know, in Gauteng as we speak, money has been given out ostensibly for houses. A year down the line, we find that there were no houses first. And I'm saying this is the danger of this type of thing. Because if I'm hearing what the accounting officer is saying, then I would suggest that we pay when we've got the supporting documents. Because then the AG won't come up with their payments without supporting documents. It is just a clumsy way of doing business. And I'm saying, and 14 million is quite a bit of money. It's quite a bit of money. So I would appeal that we refrain as far as possible of that kind of sense. It can't be good factors. But I hear what is being said, and hopefully somebody can come back and in fact verify that in the month of April of last year, in fact that money has been cleared. Because if it's there in future, then it means that we're going to have a problem. But we will take your word that it has been cleared. So let me move on, Chairperson, to page 113. For 13.1. Now, let's start with the staff debtors of 3.5 million rand. And I can, according to your 13, of that 3.5 million rand, 3.2 million rand is older than 3 years. If you just link those two. Can somebody explain to me what are these staff debtors representing? And more worryingly, how long do we expect for these staff debtors before they redeem?
Thank you, Chairperson. The part of this money is money that the department was never able to recover from staff members. And part of the reason for not recovering that money would be that certain people would leave the department owing salaries to the department, and some of them would be people who have absconded. So, ordinarily, we should be able to, you know, having perfect systems in place, we should be able to recover this money maybe by not releasing their entire pension and the like. But our systems have been weak, and therefore we've had, and given the size of the department, we found ourselves having to deal with it. So we are sitting with this problem of people who have left the department without having paid the department what they were owing to the department.
Accounting officer. Just two lines below there, we have something called bursary debt. Quite separate from salary overpayment. Now, the argument of departments or employees leaving owing bursary. I hear what you say, but that's 1 million rand. This says salary overpayment of 3 million rand. So it can't be, are we then saying that it's a bursary that's, what is the salary overpayment?
Look, the salary overpayment is salary overpayment. These are people who would have left the department, owing the department, maybe absconding, and the department has never been able to recover those monies from them.
I think the point they say salary overpayment. What does salary overpayment mean? So that I don't assume it's simple English, because simple English would mean that the calculation of people's monthly salaries fluctuates. Sometimes they get more than they deserve. What does that mean? What does it mean?
What this would mean, Chairperson, is that you may find that a person has absconded from the department. That person left around March, and head office only came to know about that maybe in September. So what it basically means is that from April to September, they've been that money has been paid.
So now I'm getting more worried, because what you are saying to me, from April and September, we were paying ghost workers. That's what you are saying to me. No, it's fine. Then we've got a problem, number one, that you're paying ghost workers. But I think the second problem, unless you come to this committee and can prove to us that person has died, we'd expect you to go and look for the person, because he owes taxpayers 3 million rand, and come to us and say to us, this person has died, this person has been liquidated, or something to that effect. We can't have a situation where you are saying, number one, we're putting money into account for somebody that doesn't work for us, and then secondly, 3 years later, we must approve a write-off of it. I don't think that is how we want to operate. Can you just give us some comment on that?
One of the ways of overcoming that is that from time to time we do salary investigations just to ensure that the people who get paid are actually the people who are there doing the work itself. So through that process, we employ legal investigators to help us look at that. And so we have a legal firm who is assisting us in trying to trace these people as well. So it's something which we wish should be avoided, but once it has happened, we are able to follow it up. Of course, to what extent would you be able to recover the total debt, I think is another matter.
Yeah, we're not expecting that. I'm saying I'm not going to delay that. But a salary overpayment that is older than 3 years probably has prescribed. And if it has prescribed, then you must write it off or ask for it to write it off. I'm going to reflect it like it is here. It's going to create problems for you, and we're going to give you a hard time on that. We can't have somebody owing us salaries for 3 years. You must come and explain why you overpaid him, and then let's argue about whether we should agree on the write-off or whatever, but not over 3 years. So I don't think that is going to be acceptable to us, but we hear what you're saying. Let's move to page 114.
I'm looking at this question of staff debt. I mean, if you look at 13, just before 13.1, you find that less than 1 year, it's 4 million. And older than 3 years, it's 3 million. So it might be indicating a deteriorating situation. Unless I'm not reading it correctly. Or can we get away from the auditor?
Thank you, Chair. Just to give some clarity on what the salary overpayments relate to, it's basically when shops in the department have been transferred to other departments and they are not timely taken off the personnel system. So hence they are still receiving a salary from DWARF and at the same time in the department which they have been transferred.
I think that's fine. But what you are saying is that we can't have a situation, if they move from DWARF to education, it should be one stroke exercise to fix it up, because it's within the state's employ. So I'm saying my concern is that it's 3 years. And if this person, what the auditors are saying to me, is that there is a potential that one employee gets paid from two departments, and possibly three departments or 10 departments, it's not acceptable. There is no explanation. That's why I'm saying to you, all the explanations that you guys are giving us are making matters even worse in terms of generally poor financial control. That's what it's saying to us. And we're asking you to fix it up. Let's move to page 114. Actually, I don't know if I can continue. Yeah. Page 114. And again, I don't know. Somebody might have to explain that the accounting general or the auditor and the department There's a 39 million rand for interest owed to the department. Because I'm reading debtors as money is being owed to the department. Who owes us 39 million rand for interest?
Well, without having the specifics in mind, but we've got several clients who, from time to time, owe the department money. One of the biggest ones would be municipalities, because we sell water to municipalities. But we also have other clients like your agricultural businesses, in other words, the various farmers and the like. So, if there are people who are owing us, it would be one of those clients, municipalities and mainly farmers.
Thank you. Just a question then. You know, sorry.
Okay. But we will certainly make the whole list available, which makes up the 39 million.
Yeah, please do that, because I don't think we want to get into the business of being bankers as a department. I don't think we want to get into that business. So we must be just clear. I mean, we can't have a situation where, people owe us 39 million rand, and if indeed they owe us that 39 million rand, we would need to find a way of getting that money into the fiscus, unless you have got your department is entitled to by Treasury, and I don't know, maybe Treasury should assist, but our department, is it all right for departments to generate 39 million rand interest and that type of thing? I would have assumed that how is the service delivery? I'm just asking the question. 39 million rand for me, and it wasn't there last year, you see, so it means in 12 months there was an interest due to us of 39 million in 12 months. What are the interest rates that we are paying, that we are charging? Because this is only generated in 12 months' time. How many people, what's the extent of the debt that we are giving to people if we can be able to claim in our books that 39 million rand is due to us in 12 months? It sounds like a very, very high amount for just 12 months. I'm looking at Treasury, I'm looking at the AG, I'm looking at all of you. In fact, I don't know that in my 10 years or 8 years in this committee that we picked up such an exercise. I don't recall having where a department has 39 million rand on its books due to it. So, I don't know that you guys can give us an answer now. I just want you to note that for us it's something that is foreign. We don't think that it is something that we should be doing, unless, as I say, Treasury or the auditors or the Auditor General can just update us, just because it wasn't there last year.
Chair, if I remember well, somewhere in the Treasury regulations, there is a provision that if there is outstanding debt to the department, that debt must attract interest, because then the department is losing interest. But that is money that will go to the revenue fund ultimately. But for control purposes, it will be raised by the department until it is received, and then it will be transferred to the revenue fund. So it will reflect in the department. What it relates to, I was speculating, Honorable Mr. Smith, but if you look at that part for the receivables, which is on page 130, talk about that analysis of 13.1. I think it's 13, just before 13.1. There is claims of 204 million or something like that. And again, I must put it on record that is speculative. Looking at those kinds of numbers, if those numbers are beyond the 30 day or whatever the terms of collecting them, they would have attracted interest. And they're big enough to make a 40 million interest.
All right, thanks. Page 147, Chair, and then I'll go to the last one. Page 147, I think it touches what we've been discussing now. That's intergovernmental receivables. the method that you're discussing now, counting officer. Red flag, Bashilo, 168. What is that? Can somebody explain? Page 147, it says other government entities flag for Shilo, and they owe you 168 million rand.
I don't have to come back with more information on that, because if it's like Bushele is a dam, and because it is a dam, it could be that it's amount that was borrowed. But we'll check on it. Because it is also with other dams, I mean the rest of the entities that are associated with dams.
Yes, I also know Lake Bushielo to be a dam in the Popo, around Skukuni area. So, just a few minutes, yes, Honorable Trent.
Yes, Mr. President, I just want to follow up question on his last one.
Thank you, Chair. My final question before I make a general comment. I want to refer the DG to page 112, 5.3. We've got travel and subsistence of 178 million rand. That's local travel and subsistence, 178 million rand. And earlier on, when one of my colleagues asked the question, there was an answer that says people travel and they don't necessarily cancel their bookings and so on, and therefore it raises debt and so on. But that was an explanation given by somebody. I think my first comment, 178 million rand for local travel, sounds very, very, very excessive to me. It sounds very excessive. I'm tempted to ask the department to give us a recall. Who travels, how much they travel, and I'm almost sure that it's going to be a problem to do that. But maybe we should ask them to give us a recall. Who travels, how many kilometers for that 178 million rand? For 1 year, and this is just local travel. Maybe you guys will need to give us a breakdown by employee, who travels, what for, and will just travel value for money, or is it a holiday to the Kruger National Park type of thing? Because 178 million rand, especially after we were told that ships get cancelled and the bookings not necessarily cancelled. So that was my final question, sir. But just broadly speaking, I caught one of my colleagues, or two of my colleagues, raising the issue of capital or budget for capital being transferred to current. In a department like Water Affairs, that is a primary service delivery, that is probably as close to sin as you can get. If you transfer capital or money that they intended for capital expenditure to current expense. Now, I'm sure you've given the reasons then, but I'm just generally saying that where people still using the bucket system, where Mr. Pule comes from haven't had water and don't have water, and then we take money for capital and we transfer it to current. It's close to sin as we can get, as I said. It's just a comment that I'm making, and we'll raise that with the portfolio committee so that they can follow that one up with you. I just think it's a terrible practice if it is indeed what is happening in your department. Thanks, Mr. President.
Alright, thank you. You have a question? I'll only have only one question.
Just to follow up on Vince's question on the intergovernment receivables on page 147, which was increased from 20 million to 263 million in the space of 1 year. Obviously, some of the bigger ones, each flag was shallow, but what I I don't understand how that happened. How can you go from 20 million to 263 million? And then, I don't understand what's the difference between concerned and unconcerned, because all that amount, the only amount that you put as concerned is 606,000. Does that mean that these people are disputing the fact that they owe you this money? So, are these possible bad debts in the making? You know, this to me, this is very strange.
I would suggest that we give a written answer to them. We'll find out just now. We'll give an answer before we leave.
Honorable Chair, and yeah, we'll come with Mashiane and Honorable Baker. Actually, welcome to committee. And I'm there.
Mr. Chair, yes. I see that, you know, there are lots of problems in the department as we've actually listened over the last 2 hours. Yet, SCOPA noted that the department, your department, paid performance bonuses amounting to 15.3 million rand. Now, this amount comprises 2.2% of total salaries and wages. And that is in excess of 1.5% allowed in terms of the public service regulations. And further, to rub salt into the wounds, the minister's approval was not obtained with regard to this excess. Now I want to know who did authorize this spending of, or this payment of performance bonuses.
So I think if the observation is that the authority of the minister was not obtained, then it would mean that the minister did not authorize. And right now I can just speculate that...
I think the issue and the focus is not on the minister, whether she authorized or not. The issue is on who authorized in the thing that 2% is above the accepted prescription of national treasury, which would then require the executive authorization. So in the absence of that executive authorization, who authorized?
I think what one would want to comment on here, it's just speculation. And it would be that...
Why should it be speculated? A question of bonuses. How are the performance appraisal? Is there a bonus or performance appraisal in the department? And where is it located? Who handles it? And where do they report to? I think let's pin it down to the practicalities as they obtain in the department.
Ordinarily, what would happen is that you would have HR playing their role in facilitating the payment of the bonuses, but at some point, the one who signs off finally for this to go ahead to the minister would be the head of the department.
So my next question, you know, the DG, you must have in final instance authorized it, or at least have been aware of it. And you didn't stop it, so you agreed with it. Is that correct?
Okay, look. And in this case, I probably will have to speak in two ways. At that stage, I wasn't the DG, but I will say as head of department, the DG now. The DG probably signs what he believed on 1.5, and maybe on payment, realized that it was above 1.5. I can only speculate that that is what must have happened, because I don't think he deliberately.
Okay, you're speculating now, but who exactly authorized it? It wasn't you, you weren't the Director General at the time. But was it the then Director General, or was it the CFO? Who signed this authorization for the payment of these performance bonuses? That's not
possible. I don't have the submissions here in front of me, but I can certainly ask for them, so I can come back to you later on this.
Okay, then my next question is, do you have a performance performance bonus policy in place?
We do have now. If I can frame the question is, we haven't been applying it strictly, but that's one of the areas which we are upgrading our own capacities in and performance. I alluded earlier on that one of the reasons why we have been able to proceed with low skill base for quite some time is precisely because we haven't been applying the performance management system quite effectively.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know which is worse. I thought if you didn't have a performance bonus policy, it would have been a bad thing. But now you're telling me you do have one, but you don't apply. So why bother? You know, so you I really don't know which case would be worse. So on what basis then, if you don't, you have a policy, but you don't apply by your own admission. Now, on what basis or what criteria do you use to pay out performance bonuses? How do you then decide who should get one and who shouldn't get one?
I think the information...
No. Let's end it this way. When it relates to a specific course of action that was taken, in the financial year under review, in terms of who actually did what and how. Although, of course, it is the department that is answering, I don't think we'll have that information here and now. Since I don't know why I thought the DG has been there for more than 3 years, and it does appear from what it says. For the year under review, you are not yet with DG. And I would imagine that whoever processed that awarding of bonuses obviously did not follow that or did not use that policy or whatever it's indicating. It just dished out bonuses and stuff like that. So it might as well be that they may need to give us specific information in terms of what actually happened so that we have an idea of who exactly did what. But at this point, I don't think that they are able to provide us that information.
Okay, we will then wait for them to give us that information in writing. And I think we should ask within a certain time period, Mr. Chairman, maybe within the next month, because otherwise it's on the never-never.
I think we can be able to get that within a week or two, because it's very specific information that we're looking for that they should supply to us.
I'd be happy with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Then further up still on this issue is, now that you're aware that this money has been paid far over and above what you actually allow, do you agree that this would be regarded as irregular expenses?
I think that money would lend itself to, and therefore we would do everything in our power to ensure that it doesn't happen again. But maybe the impression, if I created the impression that we have a policy, we don't apply it, the information I was trying to communicate that we apply it poorly.
Okay, Mr. Chair, so you agree that it could be regarded as irregular expenditure, and you now give me assurance it won't happen again. But the fact that this has happened, it's irregular expenditure, you actually have to try and get that money back. How are you going to do that?
I will certainly take advice from my other colleagues from other departments, like DPSA, like National Treasury, and say, how would we go about it? Because it would certainly be an involved process, but it is something which I would certainly follow up and explore.
Because it will not inflate, you know, the sub debt that we already have spoken about earlier on.
So it would inflate that stuff, and you're quite right. But I feel that apart from the individuals, I don't know how many people they involved, how many staff members, maybe you just kind of gave bonuses across the board on a proportionate basis. But I would actually want to hold the person who authorized that and we'll get that information hopefully later on. That's the person account for, and maybe that's the person who should we should look at towards recovering that money, because he authorized something which was an illegal expenditure and didn't exercise his duties properly in checking that this was not in excess of what was allowed, and he didn't apply the policy properly, as you said. So we would eagerly await that information so we could take the appropriate steps. But we would also want recommendations from you, or assurances from you about what you are going to do to recover this irregular expenditure.
My assumption is that the information was involved for actually authorized the payments, and clearly would expect that if the person is given the government department, there's some action that would be taken against that person. So yes, I'm taking it to just a matter of course that that needs to happen. Right, and that. Okay, yes, committee.
Just regarding the debtors, DG. Now, if I understand, the debtors is for users of water, for instance, like in the agricultural sector as well, including farmers, right? So even if they don't use the water, they pay for it, am I right? It's for the availability of water. Well, how does the system work if they pay for it?
No, ordinarily what happens, farmers will pay for the water that they use.
Now, how do you... That's not the way it works. You pay for the availability of the water even though you don't use it. It's an argument from a name, can you?
Yeah, not in all cases. I mean, there are areas where we've got meters. So farmers would be billed by the water user association on the basis of the water that that they use. And that is where, if for instance they wouldn't pay and their account is verifiable, then the water user association would close the water going through, and we've done that.
But there are areas there, and not all the areas that water association uses, do they? Now in those areas, what happens to, you have to pay for the water even though you don't use it.
Okay, I'm caught between information here. But certainly there are areas where the farmers would pay because they pay for the availability of water, yes. I missed the follow-up question.
Yeah. Now, in those areas that they pay for the availability of water, which is registered, because you all have to register your water at a certain date. Now, there are some of those areas sometimes where the rivers are dry. Even the Limpopo sometimes are dry. And you send people accounts. Now, that is reflected in your books as debtors. But those people are not really debtors, because how can they pay for water when there's no water, when the river is dry?
If there are such areas, there would be very few, and it could be that it hasn't been brought to my attention, unless of course over this month, because it has been it's been very hot. But by and large, those farmers would have checked if they were to pay, because they are not receiving any water, and we would have to adjust their accounts accordingly.
But now there are such cases. There's also other cases. You know, before a certain day, you had to register as a water user for agricultural purposes or whatever, being from agricultural sector. Now, and then the department automatically, most of them approved them on their system as water users. Now, I put it to you, in certain of those cases, in terms of the Act and the Water Act that we have, there are some other rights to that water that those people that are registered with are not really entitled to. So my suggestion is, and my question also in the same, are you busy with the system of cleaning up your debtors to see who really owes you money and who is in the first instance allowed to register water?
No, certainly. It falls under, one of the programs it falls under is the water allocation reform, because we have to redistribute. available water, and that exercise involves verifying first who are the authorized users, who are the legal users. And the next stage of that is to what extent are they utilizing what they are authorized to use to see whether we can free up water. But we are cleaning up. That process of verification and validation is on as we speak.
I hope the committee feels appreciate that that process again will be affected upon by the capacity constraints within the department. So I don't want us to talk about programs and processes that are in place without going back to that question of vacancies, especially at very senior levels, which hampers the capacity or the ability of the department to take charge of its mandate to the extent that is expected of it. So, Mr. DG, the question of capacity will come back again and again and again and again and again to have a negative impact on all these myriad of things that you need to be doing to ensure that you deliver on your mandate. Right. You are on holiday today. All right. Yes, Honorable Mr.
Chairman, yes, I have another question. The SOCA, the committee, has also noted that there's a number of investigations going on based on the risks identified by the department. I'll read you what these investigations are. One of them is alleged threat and non-conformance with the government policies and procedures. Another one is alleged improper procurement procedures following the purchase of two golf carts. Alleged irregularities in the handling of issues by management. Alleged fraudulent conduct by area manager. Alleged fraudulent changing of bank details by persons unknown. And alleged unprocedural appointment of directors in the financial management section. Now my question is, what progress are you making with now your uncertain date investigations? When will it be tabled? When is the deadline for this investigation to be completed? When will it be tabled? And who will deal with it?
Ultimately, the responsibility will be falling on me. So I will certainly follow up on the progress to date, and I'll be able to make that information available. But ultimately, the bank stops with me.
Okay, thank you. But it's a very unclear answer, a very vague answer. When will this process be completed? Who is investigating? Who is the company? Did you outsource it? Is it an audit company? And when do you expect them to complete this report?
I do not have that detail. Which document is the one I remember referring to?
This is not in the annual report, but it's based on information given to SCOPA by the Auditor General, picked up in the auditing process.
No, ordinarily, what would happen within the department, we would have appointed someone to do the investigation for us. And usually they don't take long unless it is a very complex investigation. So I just don't have the up-to-date information about this particular case you are raising, but I'll come back to you.
Mr. Chairman, we'd like to check on that we do get this. But just as a matter of interest, the thing that caught my eye was this alleged improper procurement procedures in the purchase of two golf carts. What does the department need golf carts for? What do you do with the golf carts? And who was going to use them?
I can only speculate that it must have been a staff member who purchased golf carts using the money of DWAP, and I think that's why we're investigating.
Mr. Chairman, this is a serious matter, and I'm surprised and disappointed that the DG is not fully aware of this, and he seems very sketchy on details here, but it's a matter for us to scope us to take up and pursue. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zaire. Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. You'll pardon me, I've got two. I want to make a follow-up on the question raised on the performance bonuses. In addition to the information that is sent to us, that will also give us information on who benefited from those supplement scholarships. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, we certainly will do. We will give that information.
One thing that always creates a problem when we make it official is when issues are raised by the Auditor General in the annual report, it comes to you in September or whenever. And when you come before us here in March, there is no, you haven't gone through that report and decided that these are the things that are wrong and this is what we need to choose. I think so far it's only, really without really trying to create anything, I think it's only one department that we had a hearing on here, and the accounting officer was able to say, no, I could not wait for you people. After I got this report, this is what I did. We did A, B, C, D, F on all the issues that were identified by the Auditor General. I think we find it very unacceptable that issues like the question of performance bonuses. Clearly, if you have read the report of the Auditor General, you have picked up that the monies that were paid were more than what is legally acceptable. And the minister's consent was not sought. It's clearly some pressure. What do you do about it? So that when you come here, you say, you see, on this one, these are the inquiries that I've made, and these are my findings, and this is what I'm going to do. Who will be happy with that? But if you're still going to find out and come back to us in 2 months, well, it might as well be that if Scopa did not call you, well, it might just have been water under the bridge. Not only this issue, but any other issue that we've raised. I think that is the one area that creates a difficulty for us when we engage officials. So we really would love that going forward, whether you come before Scopa or not, when the report of the AG comes out, it's up to you to sit down with your senior management. Hey, people, these are the problems identified. Let's sort them out and develop your own program of action. So if Scopa calls you in June, you must say, I've already sorted all these things out. This is what I've done. These are the results, or these are processes that are unfolding. I think that is the one area that I would want to emphasize. But that as it may, let us get the information in a week or 2 weeks time, and then we'll take it from there. But I just want to finally to raise a concern. I mean, if you look at the trading account, for the equipment account in the water trading accounts, they all have these huge difficulties. They are administered by the department. There is a section, or there is a DDG who is running with this trading entity, or how are they run administratively within the department. I'm just trying to check in terms of, ever talk about the need to improve on the department overall and some of the actions that are already being taken in the treasury and the HS office. I'm just trying to check whether the trading entities are not being left behind because you're focusing on the department, or when you deal with the department, it is all encompassed in the trading entities are also part of that exercise to revamp management and administration.
Thank you, Chairperson. They certainly are part of the total package, and I would have indicated earlier, for instance, that the bulk of the trading account is going to move into an agency which we are establishing, but actually being managed from a branch right now. But we also have a directorate that is responsible for institutional oversight. So we are also giving that institution up, because the agents will actually be much, much bigger than any of the entities that are currently existing.
Now, lastly, I would like to check with the account in general and also with the AG office in terms of your continuous interaction with the department, your own impression. Are we making progress? Should we sleep well tonight in the knowledge that these interactions that we are having are bearing fruit, or are likely to bear fruit? To bear fruit. What are your impressions? As Dr. Buller said, the department is interacting with you, but let's also get your confirmation that indeed there is movement. Because what we want, after all, is to see progress. Not that we want a good story all the time in the time, but we want to see continuous progress.
Yes, Chairman. Indeed, the continuous interactions with the department are all in the spirit of making sure that we minimize the qualifications of these reports. And for us, what's important is to identify what are the main underlying drivers of the concerns that we have picked up and the concerns that we may be picking up. And it's also part of the standard process that we are adopting for all departments to have regular steering committee sessions so that there is prompt identification and prompt clearance of the issues that we do raise. And if they cannot be cleared, one should understand what the underlying causes are so that our report can once again be more meaningful when it comes to when they come to Parliament. And it's a process that we do encourage, because we cannot have all the answers to the findings that we have unless we interact with the departments to actually put some context to the issues that we pick up. These reports will continue to require further amplification, which is what we would like to move away from. I think the more our reports are more clear and to the point in terms of the root causes, the more we can actually get quicker to solving the problems.
I was expecting a much more focused response to AG. I might be expecting too much, but I'm very specific to the interaction with the business department, and to maybe even check when did the weekly meeting start. Maybe they started in January. We don't yet have a sense of the impact, because the most important thing in any program is the impact that it has. If you have a program that has no impact, that would have not any. If I'm asking too much, I'll pass, but I want you to go specifically to your interview. I know you take me so many departments, but specifically on this one, what are they?
I think you may be asking too much, Chair, because we're not there to run the department, but rather we're there to make sure that there is clarity on the issues that we pick up, to make sure that our reports can actually be accurate in terms of the identification of the issues and elaboration of the underlying causes and their impact. I think the role of dealing with and solving the issues rests with management, but that's not just the auditors. But I think it's important that understanding is actually clearly defined.
So we must not drink much into this interaction, because after all, the responsibility of running the department lies with the manager of the department.
All right.
No, let's leave it at that. AG, accountants
general. The other AG.
Oh, yeah. I know the also the Attorney General, so we may have to raise your number.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. The interactions with the department, I think ultimately they will bear fruit. Interactions like this are always challenging in the sense that different to the water channel. The water general, of course, his interactions are always has to be guided because he can't audit himself. Maybe that's what the water channel is trying to raise, that he can't audit himself. So his interactions will obviously help the department a lot
and also helped me with the general, but he can't do this himself. With us, slightly different, we also have a legal obligation to assist the department and the DG when he approached the Treasury. We're very pleased because it gets very challenging in these interactions if the DG is not meeting with us. In this instance, we have quarterly meetings, pre-scheduled quarterly meetings between myself and the DG, where if my staff members are having problems with the staff members, I can whisper to his ears and say, listen, while we're making progress in this area and less progress in this area, the reason is because there is lack of cooperation within the department. Please sort that out. And I think that provides an avenue that gives me comfort that in relation to our interaction with Water Affairs, we should be able to make progress. When that comes through, I mean, you talked about the challenges in terms of you've got bodies in chairs and desks, which may not necessarily be appropriate in the environment that we're operating in with the prescriptions that we have currently. And therefore, that does delay the impact in terms of that. The DG has spoken about some of the initiatives that have been put in place around the recruitment, around using the retired professionals and so on, to try and bring more capacity in the department to assist in building and just giving those that are entering the department. I think constant evaluation in the quarterly meetings will help us see whether you need to redeploy people. I think the chairperson raised that question earlier on. It gets very difficult to do that upfront, but those questions will arise in the deposition and we can address those questions. So I think Chair, it will bring fruit. There has been other projects that I don't know whether the department has commented on, where they've gotten additional resources from outside of the department to try and implement some of the issues that came out of the last audit report. I am aware of that because of these interactions. Part of it is what we deliberated with the department, and the department has taken that up quite seriously, and they have trust that. So that there will be improvement, yes. When we will see that improvement in the form of an unqualified report, that remains to be seen, and the Auditor General would be the determinant of that. But we're confident that with the right attitude at the right level in the department, the Minister is committed to this process, the DG is committed to this process, that gives me comfort that we will be able to crack it at some point.
Thank you very much. I think we want to bring this process to a close, and thank you, Accountant General and the Agent's Office, for presence and contribution, and also thank members as always for the interactions that we've had in the department. DG, want to thank you and the department as well for having made it and responded as forthrightly as possible to the questions posed. The intention of the questions obviously to seek clarity for our purposes and to report to Parliament. Indeed, I must concur with the Accountant General that if there is need to improve things from the right levels, it becomes much easier. I think some departments really collapse to the ground before they can even call for assistance. And I think it is quite commendable that they proactively went to look for assistance. I think if we could have that kind of attitude, I don't think we have some of the kind of challenges that we have, where people acknowledge and realize that we have problems. And we can only succeed if we get assistance. We can only hope that that process should turn things around going forward. But having said that, it nevertheless does not take away from the fact that the situation in the department is not good. And I think you yourself would acknowledge that, and that there is a need to change things for the better as quickly as possible, so that the department been able to deliver on its mandate within the interest of our people. And there's always those who are out there in the outlying areas who will always bear the brunt of any inefficiencies in the system. And it is those people who are and have been the motive force of change. And when that change does not come to them, it defeats that very objective that they had in standing up to bring about change. So that imperative must always guide us. That we're not doing it to get a salary at the end of the month, but we're doing it for those people out there. So you have our support in trying to do this project correct, and we are going to write our report with recommendations based on our observations. That will also be an additional input to whatever measures and processes that you're having in the department to get things right. We want to thank you very, very much and wish you every success in all your endeavors. We want to bring this to a close with just one or two announcements. For members, tomorrow the venue is E249 for FAA and Diamond Balls. They have not promised any gifts, either of free air tickets or diamond. But at 9 o'clock. I'm not sure if we put it out tomorrow. All right, fine. So it's 9 o'clock. So please let's be there timely. Yeah, I think we want to end the meeting on that note. The last item after the closure of the meeting, I think Gershon will take care of it. As you can see, his back, he tells me he can take a varum clap on the jaw. He's completely healed. Before I do so, committee.
You know, just to say that, you know, originally on the program, it's stated that we start with Diamond Board and then SAA, but we're turning it around. We'd like to start with SAA and then go into Diamond Board.
That's fine.
Chairperson, I want to make a request that members remain for a few minutes when everybody else is here. According to the law,
okay. Okay. This is your birthday today. Oh, okay. All right. No, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Wait for those few minutes. Hear from COVID machine.
Thank you.